Canto 24 of The Paradise opens with Beatrice calling on St. Peter to come to her and Dante in order to ask Dante about his faith. Now, it's really important to think about the ways in which Beatrice does this, because that signals what she, Peter, and indeed Dante are really trying to celebrate in this word faith, because it's a word that is easily misunderstood, and precisely by understanding it aright is the means by which Dante is able to transition through these next cantos in order to enter the Imperium and see the vision of God face to face. One way of putting this is it picks up directly from the previous canto, where these themes of the womb that could bear the presence of God in order to give birth to the divine in mortal life, in the figure of the Virgin Mary, that is the same dynamic of faith, because faith is that which can provide a container, a womb, a place for the divine to be fostered, to mature, to become incarnate and manifest upon the earth. It's the kind of faith which Helen Luke points to in her commentary when she recalls that moment when Carl Jung was asked in the famous Friedman interviews whether he believed in God. And he immediately said he doesn't believe, he knows. And that sense of knowing your life is rooted in a reality, in the divine, which is what makes sense of what you can see, but also enables you to connect with more that you can see. It's a kind of understanding of life that, in Jung's case, was gained through the course of his life, so that it became the ground of his sense of things towards the end of his life when he was asked that question. So this felt, lived, developed, discerned, sensed knowledge is what faith is really about. And it's very different from the way that the word's often used now, where it can be a kind of fingers crossed, exercised, hoping that you're, as it were, betting on the right creed. Alternatively, it can be a kind of blind assertion that pushes aside all doubt and just states in the fundamentalist way that this is what they believe, this is what they know. And both of those are so damaging to faith, because the nervous assertion prevents the exposure to the journey that really delivers this knowledge, this understanding, this more profound sense of faith, as does the blind assertion of the fundamentalist or the reaching after proof. That too removes the desire, which is so crucial to the being born, to creating the womb, to becoming an incarnate aspect of the divine, which Dante here must display towards Peter and Beatrice. They are going to ask him about faith, but not so that he produces the right formularies, not so he passed some kind of proving test. Rather, what they're listening for is the inner sense of his words, so that when that which is manifest in his words, in his articulation, in what he says, comes from his mouth, they also feel it coming from his heart. He deeply trusts this aspect of reality, but even more significantly, in a way, coming from his nous, from his mind, from his intelligence, by which is meant that aspect of himself which resonates with the divine intelligence, so that even as he sees these lights dancing around him, revealing the glory of the divine, his words too can start to dance and reveal the glory of the divine as well. They are spoken with the ring of truth, of knowledge, of desire, of love. And in a way, this is another aspect of what this canto is so profoundly about, because these things that through the course of the Divine Comedy that Dante has been struggling to bring together, his sight, his understanding, his desire, his very person, all that he is, for good and for ill, in these cantos from Canto 24, are seen coming together, and so enable him to be ready, able, capable of crossing this threshold into the Imperium, which is to say that it can become part of his conscious awareness. He can make the crossing because he can see it, and he can see it because he has become capable of embracing it. I think actually that this kind of faith is signalled at the beginning of the canto in the way that Beatrice requests Peter's presence. Dante sees the lights coming towards him, of which Peter is the brightest, and then his difficulty in describing the approaching light of Peter. Because, for example, Beatrice expresses Dante's immeasurable thirst, as she puts it. And that is the desire aspect of this understanding of faith, that the more is known, the more is not just desired, but the more we become capable of desiring based on what we do know. It opens up greater horizons, greater horizons, greater horizons. And, you know, this is actually another aspect of true knowledge. It's the knowledge of science that drives science, that when one question is answered, it opens up further questions. And so there's that tremendous delight in knowing, because you are, as Isaac Newton put it, aware of standing on the seashore and looking out across oceans of as yet not understood awareness. So that's the first aspect, this immeasurable thirst that Beatrice points to. Dante then says that he sees the lights before him moving together like clockwork. And like clockwork, where some of the wheels turn faster, some of the wheels are going so slowly you can hardly see them moving. And yet they are charting, tracking, making manifest the deep mystery of time. So I think Dante is signalling that this is what faith is like as well, that it brings together disparate different aspects of ourselves, some which, as it were, moves quickly, some which is more thoughtful, moves more slowly. But when those different aspects of ourselves are brought together, they too can make manifest in our lives the deep mysteries of life itself, of the divine. You, as it were, see the depth of someone's soul in the manner in which they live. And Dante uses the imagery of the clockwork revealing the mystery of time to show that aspect of faith. But then, thirdly, as Peter approaches, Dante expresses again how his pen is not able to capture the delight and beauty and brightness of this light. And that too is an important aspect because, as we've been saying a few times now, that inability of, as Dante puts it now, words or fantasy or image, fantasy meaning that aspect of ourselves which reaches out to try and see beyond the images with which we're already familiar, to receive that new vision. All these things must importantly fall short, because otherwise, as it were, the gates of understanding close shut. If that weren't the case, if Dante's pen wasn't struggling, then he would have become like the fundamentalist who just thinks they can write it down, or like the nervous believer who thinks they must write something down in order to feel more secure, or like the modern believer who seeks to prove their faith with argument or with evidence, and so writes that down on the page. No, Dante, really crucially, can't write down all that he's experiencing, because that is one of the signs of the faith that wells up from within him, that's bigger than him, and yet he is able to give some sense of it, even as he acknowledges that it's very hard to give, well, impossible to give a full sense of it. Enactment of faith continues because Peter then speaks to Beatrice and tells her that the earnestness of her desire for Dante's benefit is what has drawn him from the Imperium to meet them here in the fixed stars. And that is what desire can do. It can bring down, it can invite, it can welcome the grace. And that's another important aspect of this dynamic of faith. And then Beatrice replies by inviting Peter, as he sees fit, to test Dante, to ask Dante to speak from his own mouth, from his own voice, from the depths of his own understanding of what he knows through faith. And it's a very nice moment because, in a way, if Beatrice has stood for that erotic desire that's driven Dante forward, and you might say Peter, known as the rock upon which Christ will build his church, you might say stands for the logos, for the expression of the faith. In this moment, Beatrice is saying to Peter, Beatrice the erotic is saying, bring forth the logos from Dante. And Peter, the logos, is saying, I'm responding to your eros, to your desire. So we see a bringing together of the erotic dynamic and the understanding, the intellectual dynamic. And that is another really important part of faith, that those two aspects come together. And Beatrice confirms that when she says to Peter, ask him, and also you'll know of the truth of his responses, because you see directly the source of this truth. He sees, which is to say, he knows through the entirety of his being, the truth of words that are spoken, and so will be able to rightly ensure that Dante is able to move towards the place where all these aspects must come together in order to be able to see and perceive it. This is a test not in the sense of either condemning or judging so as to subjugate Dante. It's a test or a judgment to assure that he is able to withstand the brightness of the light that he yearns towards. It's the soul must resonate and harmonize with this divine source in order that he can see and understand it, that he can share in it, that he has incarnated in his own life. That is what it is to see God after all. Now, we're into approaching the second half of the canto, and the way that Peter asks Dante echoes what was known in the medieval world as the disputatio, which it was the way of examining a student, and it's again, a really important means of examination, because what the student was rewarded for was not summing things up in response to a question, not, as it were, formulating the perfect answer, but rather was giving answers that led into more and more insight that the question was pointing towards. So the really brilliant student could give a full and rich response to the question, but so that also indicated that there was more to understand from the question. It was in order to give direction in response to a question, but to keep the subject open and alive. And then the student was examined by the examiner, who was a sort of adept or master in the area concerned, because the student was able to make the examiner's heart sing with the delight of the subject concerned. As it were, the examiner could see that the student radiated with the same light that they knew around the subject concerned. So again, it's a very different understanding of test, where you have to kind of reach a threshold in order to pass. No. The way that Dante will pass this is if he can show that he now is capable of beaming with the same brightness of the lights that surround him through the words that he utters. And Peter starts with a good question by asking, what is faith? Incidentally, Dante is going to stand before St. James, who's going to ask about hope, and St. John, who's going to ask about love. So these three virtues, faith, hope and love, which, as we've seen, aren't just about individual character, but are the very character of the cosmos itself in summary form. And so Dante's having to show, too, that he's able to resonate with this aspect of reality, this felt, living, virtuous dynamic aspect of reality in his responses. And it's you know, there's a sort of slight sense of tension in the canto, I think. Is Dante going to be able to achieve this? And what he does, first of all, is respond very appropriately by asking for the grace to respond well. He says he feels the waters welling up from within him. And so he asks for the grace in order to be able to address St. Peter, who stands before him now. You know, that is the first indication that he does understand this faith, because the words he's going to speak are not defensive words, oh, I hope I get it right. They're actually channeling, communicating, symbolic words that enable him to move into the flow of the love and light and faith that is all around him in this high heaven of the fixed stars. He is showing his openness to become a vessel, to become a womb, to become a container for the grace with which he is then going to be able to speak. And so Dante's answers then start to unfold. And again, the manner in which they unfold and his responses develop and Peter's questioning pushes him to show more and more the depth of his living understanding is really well displayed by Dante the poet in the canto. First of all, Dante replies with a well-established, almost formulaic response to faith. When he quotes St. Paul, he says to Peter, I quote your brother whose pen was so important for formulating these things at the beginning of the Christian period, and says that faith is the substance of things hoped for and the argument for things not yet seen. So the idea here is that this living sense of faith, of understanding, of knowledge, you know, it's like an energy within you. Not just a vague hope in your mind. That can become the bedrock of a life. It's as firm as the ground upon which feet can be placed. And it points to what is not yet seen, but is known through desire. And then it's also the arguments that try and discern and develop what is not yet seen. And so deepens the faith by enabling more to be seen, more to be understood about this ground. So there's this kind of dialectic between the two aspects of faith that Dante is pointing towards. Peter then wants to test him on that and says, so look, what comes first, the substance or the arguments? And Dante replies that the substance comes first. Otherwise, the arguments just become airy nothings. As Peter replies, again, they become as much sophism, clever in themselves, perhaps, you know, good for a kind of zero-sum debate of the debating chamber to defeat an earthly enemy. But they serve no purpose whatsoever in terms of really knowing the reality of all things. And so good argument is based on faith, is based on substance, and seeks to develop and enhance and show more of the light of that faith. One way of thinking about this is to recall Tertullian's famous remark that he believes because what he believes is impossible. Now, nowadays, that's often taken as a ridiculous, irrational assertion of blind faith, blind belief. It's used to mock believers, and, you know, perhaps not without cause, because there can be that leap of faith into the darkness, which is precisely what Dante is saying faith is not. Rather, what Tertullian is drawing towards is that within the depths of his soul, he saw things that seemed impossible when he looked, as it were, more around him in a flat land kind of way, just looking at the material world. Maybe the kind of tangible evidence of things. If you look at the world and the cosmos in that one-dimensional way, then you won't see much. But when you start to look with spiritual eyes, with the mind's eye, instead of just the empirical physical eye, you start to see things that look impossible when seen from just the flatland point of view. I think William Blake is a good modern exemplar of this. In his Different States of Mind, And he said that there's a first state of mind, which he called ulro, where, for example, freedom is just seen as the ability to control things. You're free when you can control the world around you. Then he said there's a second state of mind called generation, where freedom is seen as the ability to make choices. You know, you as an individual can move through the world deciding whether you want X or Y, A or B. And if you experience that in this state of mind, that would be called freedom. A third state of mind he called Beulah, and this is the freedom that is experienced when you want to express something, when you feel you belong, when you feel you understand. In fact, it's nudging towards the faith that Dante's pointing to in this canto. And just notice how it's already changed enormously from control to choice to expression. A growing sense of freedom, you might say, because this is a character now able to move through the world freely rather than having to try and fix the world down through their control, as in the ulro state of mind. You know, so to the ulro, expression and free movement seems impossible, in fact. That is what Tertullian, I think, was beginning to point to in his remark about believing because it's impossible. And then finally, Blake draws attention towards a state of mind he called eternity, which is the most divine. And their freedom is actually seen as aligning with the truth of all things. It's a kind of submission or subjugation, or as it's put in the Sanskrit, with the word yoga, which means to yoke or tie yourself to reality. Now that seems like the opposite of freedom to the ulro state of mind, as if you're becoming a slave even to reality, completely out of control. But what the eternity state of mind realizes is that this is the very heart of freedom itself, which has given rise to the cosmos, to the universe, to nature, to all that we experience in life. That very act is free. And so becoming aligned with reality is to share in that deepest sense of freedom. The questioning to Dante goes on, and Peter asks him, "Do you have this faith?" Just straight out. And what's so striking is that Dante now in this moment is to say, "Yes, I do. I have this coin, which is round and polished, in my pocket. It's the coinage from which I live my life. It's the thing that I regard as most valuable and that I have tried to spend in my life," I guess particularly in his poetry. And it's very striking because, you know, that's complementary to the way that Dante had first responded to Peter when he had asked for the grace to meet the waters welling up from within him, an openness. Openness is crucial, but also so is assertion, saying that you have it. Because then, again, you can become a manifestation of this divinity. You can become an incarnation of this faith. And people will see it in your life, even as they see the light bouncing off the coinage, the beautiful bright disc that's in Dante's pocket, he says to Peter now. And then the questioning carries on, because Peter then says, "How did you gain this coin?" Dante realizes that the coin is a gift as well as his possession. And Dante says that I received it from the Holy Spirit bouncing off the Old and New Testaments. Again, it's a really crucial way of describing it, because this is not just reading the Old and New Testaments in search of flat proof. It's rather reading the Old and New Testaments so that they can become channels for the Spirit, for the divine. A way in which the books of the Bible can speak to you, because they speak of more than what's just on the page. So Peter is happy with that response as well. And then he says, "What's the proof of these texts? You say you know they come from the divine, but what's the proof of them in life?" And again, this means, what's the evidence that you see and know, the living quality that these texts bring? And Dante replies that it's because of the miracles that they show, that they both testify to and then also prompt in the life that Dante himself knew. And once more, it's really important to understand this word miracle properly. Thomas Aquinas, who's so influential on Dante, gave, I think, the proper understanding of miracle. And he points out that miracles can't be divine interventions. They can't be exceptional moments in which God intervenes, because, properly understood, it's God's life and light that is sustaining all things all the time already. So it just doesn't make sense to say, you know, in this moment God wasn't sustaining things and then in that moment God was doing something special. No, miracles can't be understood in that way. And again, it's quite an important point, because nowadays it's often said that because miracles are exceptional, they require exceptional evidence in order to prove them, which of course forces people to either believe in miracles blindly, because no amount of faith can really show what they want to show, or dismiss them altogether. But what Dante's pointing to here is that miracles are just the moments when we realise that divine light and life is sustaining all things all the time anyway. They are signs or symbols, and they channel this deeper life. So once again, miracles are being presented as a way of feeling into this open, expansive awareness of life, perception and understanding of life that's at the heart of faith. Peter then says, but look, isn't that a bit of a circular argument? You are using miracles, as it were, to show miracles, the sense of God's presence to show the sense of God's presence. And Dante replies that the world turned to Christ without any of these signs or symbols would be the greatest sign and symbol of it all. You know, he's partly speaking here from the moment of High Christendom, where the whole world is shaped seemingly around Christianity. But I think again he's pointing to something deeper, because remember, the Christ means the incarnation of the Logos. So he's also saying that the eyes of faith are able to see how there is this logos, this tendency, this principle, this lure, this love, this desire that runs through all things. And seeing that is the supreme symbol and sign of the divine. That is what draws you towards it, as it has him, as Dante and Beatrice have been expressing right from the get-go with their sense of waters welling up, of the immeasurable thirst. Now, at Dante's reply to this, the heavens sing a Te Deum. The sense is here that not just, as it were, there's a hallelujah chorus because Dante has spoken so well. I think Dante hears it, because in the answering, his ears become capable of seeing and hearing the hallelujah chorus, which has been sung all the time. It's that meeting of him with the heavens that his replies have sealed and secured. And Peter tells him that these replies are great and they're good. But he has one more round of questioning for Dante, and he asks Dante to express his creed, his kind of summary of these things. And it's useful for us because, again, I think it's a summary of the logos side, the words, the understanding, the insight, with the erotic side, the desire, the felt sense of it. Because Dante expresses his creed, interestingly, with a combination of the Christian creeds and also the Aristotelian insights which had so formed him. So this is pretty daring, actually, for Dante to write down and be read by his readers. It's saying that ideas which were still regarded as pretty dodgy, if not ones to be banned at the time, are actually what have enabled him to see the divine light and life. It's this Christianity beyond Christianity, still present in a canto that, if it's read too lightly, can be seen as a sort of dogmatic exertion of creedal formularies according to Christianity. It's really not that at all. And what he says is that the one God is the unmoved mover. So this is the Aristotelian bit. And he adds to it an even further point that the unmoved mover works through love, because God's love is constant and steady, you know, like the sun always beaming out the light. But that light and love is what causes the movement towards the divine. It's our response, our desire, which is the love that causes the movement of the spheres. So Dante brings it together in that way. And then he adds that he also saw this through the living manifestations, incarnations of this truth in the prophets, in the Psalms, in the scriptures again. And the point here is too that they speak to him of the living sense of these things, you know, the spirit raining down and coming through the stories and the words of the Psalms, the pronouncements and insights of the prophets. And Dante's words reach their climax because finally he expresses what in the Christian tradition is the kind of most subtle, mysterious thing that you possibly can express in words, which is the mystery of the Trinity. And so he says that he believes in the eternal three in one, for whom the word is and are equally applicable. We've come across this Trinitarian sense that grew in Dante through the purgatory. It's flashed up at various moments in the paradise, and now seals and finally celebrates his insight because he's able to see the quality of the three in one, how they come together, and not just see it in the rather flat earth quantity. How could one and three possibly add up? And let me just read the last tercet of Dante's thoughts here, as translated by Mark Muser, just to give a final celebration of what has been shown by Dante in this canto. And Mark Muser writes it as, "This is the source," Dante says, "the divine source. This is the very spark, which then ignites into a living flame, and like a star in heaven, lights my mind." So the source and Dante's mind are part of the same illumination now, he says. And Peter is delighted, and moreover circles around Dante three times, as he'd circled around Beatrice three times at the beginning of the canto. This sense that Dante, who had so had to turn towards Beatrice to enable him to take the next steps, is now really taking the steps himself, and so is beginning to be invited to rejoice and join in the divine life quite as much as Beatrice is able to do so. But it's not over yet. There are two more tests to come.